I found the button. Welcome everybody to the February 3rd Aries Working Group call. Some good conversation scheduled for today. Please remember the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. We can keep our work unencumbered here. The Thoughtful Biometrics and IW are the two conferences coming up. Are there other announcements that we should be sharing? Awesome. Related meetings review. I'll offer on the DIDCOM working group call. We talked about a topic we will address here, which is the DIDCOM service type in DID documents issue. So we'll be addressing the ARIES side of that and talking about that today. and then discussed some other really useful pieces. We talked about attachments and how to adapt it from V2 to V1, and hopefully with a few simplifications in place that can give us some advantages. So that was our discussion there. Other calls that we want to report on.
We had the Indy DID method call this past Tuesday, where we sort of settled on how we think we'll assemble DID documents from a single NIM and single attribute, or zero or one attributes, in Indy talk. So that's feeling good, fairly settled. We had some other good talks about how we'd like to see NIMs evolve, but that's not for part of this work. And then as well, next week, talking about other Indy ledger types and how to turn them into DIDs, or what's the best way to handle those. Indy contributors call, we continue to talk about the CI/CD of Indy Node and Plenum. We've got additional an additional meeting tomorrow, I believe it's tomorrow, coming up this week on that work. So if anyone's interested, let me know.
Did I hear you say that you had figured out zero or one attribs, but not necessarily N yet?
We are not going to use N attribs. We're going to go with zero or one.
For this first round? Okay.
Yeah, basically, it will be up to the writer to, so the NIM will insert a certain set of data elements into the DID doc, and then the writer will assemble the rest of the attributes and be responsible for what content that has in it, basically.
So an attribute will be able to contain more than one thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, good.
In fact, it anything else you want, other it will not allow be allowed to have the things that are derived from the NIM, but it can have anything else.
Very cool.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. This is the off week for the identity implementers call.
Is that right, Steve? This is the off week. We'll be returning next Thursday. And Trensic is going to be joining us to talk about some of their new developments and how we can all be interoperable.
Awesome. Very cool. Other meetings that we want to report on? All right. Let's dive into work updates. Aries Protocol Test Suite. I see Keith in our audience today. Any updates there?
No, none. I think with regard, not related to ABTS, but with regard to our interop testing, just want to say that that is continuing on Friday mornings. We're using, again, ABTS. We have a plan. We're also, as a next step, encouraging those who are, you know, as part of this group to look at writing test harness back channels as well. So we'd be able to support both. But so I guess it's our meeting is related to that, but there's no change with the actual APTS protocol test suite itself.
Very cool. And the best way to get in on that meeting is to contact you for details.
Yes, or you can, I think it should be on, it's part of a trust over IP, should be on their calendar, but if not, please contact me.
Awesome. Very cool. Okay. Aries Agent Test Harness.
Continue to work on the Aries Framework Go back channel. We found it a inconsistency between Framework Go and Akapai. So our first test did not work, but we're hoping to get it fixed soon. And hopefully that'll go. That was a out of band message. When that doesn't work, we're kind of stuck. So we're waiting for an update from the Go team on that. And hopefully then we're connected and be able to send messages back and forth on some on basic message types.
Very cool. Aries Shared Library updates?
Not too much to support other than Andrew's been working on making sure that all of the artifacts are being produced. Discovered that you can't yet produce an ARM artifact from some of these tools for use with Apple Big Sur, but all of the other pieces are being done. That will allow us to move soon after the, I'll jump into Aries Cloud Agent Python release 0.6 is this week. And so related to shared library, after 0.6 comes in, we'd like to merge into main the shared library work. So you can actually run an Akapai agent from main using the shared components.
Is that intended to be by default or is it a command line? How's that being?
It will not be by default and it'll be a command line.
Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
0.6, one of the changes we made in Akapai this week was to move to main as the primary branch. So anyone who's working on that should be aware of that. That change was made. So you might have to adjust your forks or your clone of forks or whatever that is. And as I say, 0.6 release notes will be coming out and 0.6 should be done this week. We just came off the Akapug meeting right before this to confirm that. Also mentioned that the credential exchange, the issue credential v2 draft will be part of that release. It won't be the final, but it'll be an alpha version of that. So that will be in the release. SICPA and Indicio announced that they are working on a DID resolver for Akapai that will allow resolving, will allow fallback to a universal resolver for any DIDs necessary. So that will soon be part of Akapai, which is cool. We're looking forward to that.
Awesome.
Steve, did I hear also there's Akapai work going on related to carry support?
Nope.
Okay.
you did not hear that, Keith.
I did not. Okay.
No, I'm just teasing.
Yeah, no, not that I'm aware of. We still,
it must
have
been a malicious rumor, sorry.
Craziness.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe others are doing some things and they haven't mentioned it to me, but I'm not aware of any.
Okay. Someone's just trying to hype the carry stock price with rumors. I'm kidding. There's no carry stock. Also, don't take an investment advice from me.
Sorry. Can I ask a question on the Aries shared again? Could you just give a quick overview of, I know you're primarily doing this among, you know, you guys. Are there other people who are migrating from using the ND SDK to these shared libraries? And
I know IndieBDR is being used elsewhere. I don't know of anyone moving to shared RS or ASCAR. Okay. So it may be Akapai only. We'll see.
We want to do that, actually. So I am not sure about any complications at the moment, but we want to do that in a few months from now, definitely.
We'll smooth off the rough edges for you.
That would be kindly appreciated.
I will also indicate a non-committal high level of interest from Indicio.
Yeah, awesome. We're really looking forward to getting it into the main branch and being able to deploy it with as just an option and be able to turn all that on and see how it works and tune from there. The initial work has been, you know, positive and looks good. So we want to run it more.
Very good. Aries Framework, go. I don't see Troy. Anyone else have an update on Aries Framework Go?
Yeah, hello. This is George. So as far as the framework is concerned, we're basically cleaning, or well, we're 2 or 3 weeks away from wrapping up integration of presentation exchange with BBS Plus in our present proof protocol. By then, we will have a demonstrative BDD test to show off. And also, we are supporting the kind AcaPi folks with their integration efforts into the test harness. We are aware of a couple of things that we need to upgrade because when the framework the framework implemented previous versions of out of band, for instance. So, yep, that's that.
Excellent. I don't see Jack here. Other projects we want to report on.
Hey, Sam.
Yeah.
Since nobody jumped in, this is sort of a cross project Aries topic, but a combination of things. We put in a report a couple of weeks ago to the technical steering committee at Hyperledger and asked a question about, you know, what do we have to do to get from incubation to active, because the criteria is more around, or appear to me to be more around, a project like Fabric, where it's a single thing, versus Aries. They strongly recommended that we simply put in an application to exit incubation. And so the document related to that, I'll put it in chat and post it into the meeting minutes. But I'd like to get working on that and put in a document to request that based on the state of the various projects that we exit incubation, become tagged as an active project in Hyperledger. I think it's long overdue. I think we should have done this months ago. So anyway, just wanted to get any comments on that and mention that I'll probably try to take a first cut at that and get help from others.
Thank you for both the work and bringing that up, Stephen. I added that at the top of the agenda to drop that in there. That should be something that we check in on a regular basis and see how we can assist. I will mention I joined a Hyperledger TSC meeting, and one of the things that I gleaned from that is that most of the guidelines for changing the status type have to do with making sure that your community is not just representatives of a single company. And we have that in spades. What's a little bit different is most of the other projects are a little more unified around exactly one code base, and we are not. And so that's a little bit different, but most of their guidelines have to do with the fact that there's ongoing involvement from lots of different representatives of the community, and it's not just based on a single organization. And I think we have that one pretty well sorted. So Stephen, thanks for that. I appreciate that. Anything else before we get to our agenda? Awesome. Okay, the two main topics that we have for discussion today is, first of all, the DIDCOM service type that goes in DID documents. I'll have some commentary on that before we open up for thoughts and suggestions and ideas. And then the second thing that I have, as we discussed last week, is a PR that I have made to Steven's PR for the Aries Interop Profile 2.0 that that will propose a way of moving forward with AIP to see if it's a good idea or not. And so those are the two items I had on the agenda. Do we need any adjustments before we get going? Okay, so DIDCOM service types. In the DID core, there's a link to this DID spec registries document. And this is a place for various types of things that are acceptable in DID documents to be listed and explained. The one that's super relevant to us is the service type, which would be the type that actually appears in a service descriptor here. I'm highlighting linked domains because that's actually the only one in the section that is here. And we discussed there's been discussions about what to do with DIDCOM here and how to represent it. And with both the creation of the documentation on the DIDCOM side and then a PR to this document that would actually contain the examples and the links to the other places where we want to go. So linked domains, and this has to do with the DID, the well-known DID configuration work at the DIF. This is their example, and DIDCOM would slot in here as another entry within the 5.2 section under service types. We had some discussion on Monday in the DIDCOM working group at the DIF that is working on DIDCOM v2, and we will pursue inclusion in this registry for DIDCOM v2. And the service type name that we've actually settled on for DIDCOM v2 is a DIDCOM messaging. There's a little bit of history there. When we created that working group, there was some encouragement that we focus on DIDCOM messaging to leave potential room for something that is more of a streaming nature in the future. And so we proceeded just with that name adjustment. There has been no work moving towards something streaming, but it provides the name there. So that's a convenient way to actually differentiate between what we're referencing DIDCOM mostly now by convention, not by inclusion in this registry here in the Aries working group. And that would provide an easy way to differentiate between the DIDCOM v1 within Aries and DIDCOM v2 as DIDCOM messaging in the DIDCOM working group. And so that is their plan. What I'd love to do today is discuss what we think we ought to do in order to make this happen. And I think there's kind of two options that I'll propose. We're operating under convention right now, in the sense that this is where you look in the DID doc for the endpoint, and that's how you establish it. We could continue with the convention that we have and not seek to actually register it in light of transitioning to DIDCOM v2, or we could actually go official where we produce the sufficient documentation and then submit a PR to the DID spec registries repo with that inclusion as a way of becoming sort of more official as part of that process. So that's my background. I'm curious to hear from folks what they think our direction ought to be, what we could do, stuff I haven't mentioned, or anything else related to the topic.
Sam, this was on my radar as a worry, and I'm glad that we're bringing up the subject. At the time that I started worrying about it, it was because I think Stephen Curran asked me a smart question and I realized I didn't know the answer about it. But I had been thinking of it entirely as a DIDCOM v2 thing. I never considered the possibility that we would intend to register the DIDCOM v1 thing in addition. So now you've opened my brain a little bit further. It seems to me that I saw a proposal from George about expanding the internal structure of the thing we call service endpoint to document routing keys versus key agreement keys or something like that. And I'm not remembering which of the many conversations George has been contributing good ideas to was the one that I saw that in. So George, maybe you can speak up on that. But I would like it to be the case if we do both DIDCOM V1 and DIDCOM V2 that we try to make them as similar as possible rather than treating them as different, you know, independent subjects. I don't know, I guess if there are legitimate reasons to diverge, so be it.
This is me pausing for other opinions.
So this is George. To be quite frank, I'm not sure what to say. I'm not even sure of the, I haven't looked at the exit criteria. I'm not sure what the implications are, but as the protocols are today, they're not really there yet, quite there yet for us. So I'm not sure what the plan would be.
No, so we'd moved on from the incubation topic, George, to talk about the service type registration, version one versus version two.
Oh, heard Daniel referring to the incubation part and the registration.
No, all I right. think he was referring to the, you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dana, but I think you're referring to the.
Oh, my bad. Sorry.
No, that's sorry. Okay.
I'm doing all right. I'm actually Sam, I'm 50-50 on this.
Sam, do you know where is there a single place where that, and it's terrible I'm asking this, but where the service endpoint is defined in DIDCOM? I believe there is, right? But
so
in
there's
one, yes.
There's also in V2.
I meant V1.
Yeah, I don't have the link, but I should grab it. It's in an RFC.
Yeah.
DIDCOM service conventions or DIDCOM conventions, something like that.
Okay. It's that one. Okay.
Let me see if the Google can return this here. 67, it looks like, is the place that describes this.
Yeah, there it is. Okay.
I'm gonna grab this and paste it in the meeting notes. So a couple of relevant thoughts. I'm going to put this here. One is that I think part of the answer depends on how rapidly we anticipate switching from one to the other. I think if we see DIDCOM V1 as something that will be deprecated, in a shorter rather than a longer time frame, then I think that it matters a little less that we go official, if that makes sense, since we'd be adding support and transitioning to DIDCOM V2 anyway. If there is a sense that DIDCOM V1 needs to be around for a substantial amount of time, and that people would still build towards DIDCOM V1 even in the presence of DIDCOM V2, or that DIDCOM V2 is expected to take long enough that we need to solve this more officially here, then I think that that would indicate that we should seek an official path for this. So I was super vaguish on timelines there. Given the nature of this work, it's hard to pin down an exact ship date for this stuff. The goal is to get to DIDCOM V2 sooner rather than later.
Does routing keys mean the same thing in the two versions?
It does.
The only difference is the presence of recipient keys and the priority.
Yes. There's another subtle difference here in that if you specify the DIDCOM V2 way, you're indicating that you're capable of receiving that envelope format according to the DIDCOM V2 spec. And if you don't, then you may not, which means if we were to register them both as DIDCOM, for example, just to be nice and generic, that you might end up with a circumstance where you only support the new DIDCOM and the other person only supports the old DIDCOM, or vice versa, and now you have a problem. And so being able to discover at the outset that this is there, I think would be useful. To Daniel's point, we can make the structures mirror them as close as we can to minimize any problems there and ease the process of moving from V1 to V2. But there's still... but yes, I mean, I think the real question is, do we go, and that's a desire anyway. The question is, do we go official, or do we stay with the convention that we've been operating under?
My preference would be to go official. I don't think it's that much more work.
What would be the relation between this and the interop profiles?
That's a good question.
This is in the interop profile, right? Isn't 67 part of AIP?
It might be.
We can check that pretty quickly.
Interop profile 1. Okay, yeah.
Interesting. It is not.
Well, that could be something we can consider adding.
Wow. I'm kind of surprised, I got to say.
I think maybe it just didn't come up. But yes, I think George, that's a good question. I think that they are not dependent on each other, but we should certainly sort of, if we're going official with stuff, we should try to include that in an AIP so that it's part of an established community target. This discussion has prompted a review of the DIDCOM V2 approach to things, and I think should probably prompt a review for us to make sure that if we're going to formalize this thing, that it's actually in a place where we want it to be. And so that could happen too. Hopefully those evaluations move them closer together. But yes. Any other thoughts and commentary? Stephen has voiced his support for being official about it instead of not official about it.
Which would mean registering this structure in the DidSpec registry. Is that what we mean by official?
Yeah,
two things. One is we need a context defined, and two, we would put an equivalent to that link domains section of the DID registry.
The short answer there was that we would have both a V1 under Aries and a V2 entry. Yeah.
And note that the V1 is called DID communication. Maybe we just let that be the two differences. I don't know, but that might be too... I don't know how we can change the type.
My preference is to change as little as possible for what exactly we're currently doing today.
My thought is we have an implementation. We don't change it. So we're really
registering what we've already written.
And registering what we have today is.
So, yeah, my only final thought, which is, I think maybe what Daniel was alluding to earlier. That structure, it's not quite there where we would like so far, because if I understand correctly, for good hygiene, it's good practice to use keys for only one purpose. And the current structure, particularly the recipient's keys array, is using keys for two purposes, essentially.
Yep.
And that's the only concern we have there. So locking this now as official, I'm not sure what the implications would be if we could lock another version as official, a V2 version as official. I'm not sure.
V1.1.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Which would affect data exchange protocol in V1. Or at least the way I see it.
Yeah. So, and this is the idea that the the signing key and the encryption key should be different. The key agreement and the verification should be different.
Should ideally allow for that separation, yeah.
So this does allow for that separation, but doesn't require the separation, if I understand.
How would it allow for it, Sam? I don't think it does, right?
Well, these are the keys that you encrypt to, the recipient keys. So there's no signing purposes here?
I'm not sure. How do I approach this? So in data exchange in particular, there is an issue. And more broadly speaking, what I think is happening in practice, what is actually happening in practice is that the recipient keys arrays are actually encoding signing keys, ED25519 keys. And then the recipients are converting them to encryption keys and then doing the DIDCOM. So that's not quirk.
Right. So you're saying that needs to be updated so that it is done slightly differently. And this, I think, highly relates to the prior key purpose conversation that we had that we haven't yet found a resolution to.
Yes.
Right. So I am thoroughly interested in whatever updates we would need to make this proper.
I'd like to just chime in here and add an extra complication.
Daniel. Please.
Sam, you and I have been talking about a particular escrow type of arrangement where there would be a thing that we would call an oversight key. And what's interesting about that is that it is not best described as a key agreement key. This gets to George's comment that we're conflating two purposes. Key agreement conflates two purposes because it allows a party to come to key agreement for the purposes of encryption, and it also allows a party to decrypt. And what I want is a key type that allows decryption but is explicitly not allowed to encrypt because it's only used by auditing functions.
Oof, that sounds like something for DID core, does it not?
Well, it could be. I mean, you don't have to register every verification method in DID core, but it might be worth bringing that up. And I'm not trying to derail what we're talking about here. We could ignore this issue for the time being. I'm just pointing out that this issue of separating key types is actually kind of deep and interesting. And maybe it would be helpful for us to have a generic policy that says a service endpoint for DIDCOM has as many key type arrays as you might need, each of which corresponds to a different verification method. And then we don't have to enumerate what they all are. You know what I mean? That way, if somebody invents some new verification method, maybe key agreement falls out of favor at some point and we start calling it something different. We don't have to update our documentation because it just allows any key type to be expressed in our service endpoint.
That's good from an update in the doc perspective. That's a little more annoying from I'm a developer trying to write to this and I'm trying to figure out what to do perspective, right? Because of the dereference there.
Yeah.
So I love this, and I would love to figure out how to do this the correct way. I lack the skills to do this. I think what we could use as a group is a proposal by someone who does understand the importance and the nuance of various things and how to adjust this and as the conversation relates also the DID exchange protocol. It also has implications moving forward to DIDCOM v2, but just within this scope alone, I think that there's some valuable things to be learned here. And I think what we need as a group is a proposal on what we ought to be doing to help guide our understanding and discussion about making those changes. I often volunteer for stuff. This is something I'm not really capable of volunteering for without not doing it well. So I would, we need someone that understands this better to make a proposal to help us do this the right way.
Well, I had kind of in another context volunteered to do something on this. I didn't volunteer for exactly the work you're describing, but I volunteered enough that maybe I should volunteer for this too. but I'm not.
No good really deed goes unpunished. Is that, yeah.
Yeah. So if nobody else will wants to do it, I'll take a crack at it. But I'm I kind of feel a little bit like you. The deep mysteries of obscure key types and various curves are not really clear in my brain. But you know, I'll write something up, and somebody smarter than me will tell me where I got it wrong.
I mean, the main thing we're trying to do is in recipient keys be able to have a way that there can be a separation of keys for signature and agreement. That's really the requirement for this one, for the V1 version.
Yeah.
The V2.
But do we need, I mean, when you're sending a message to another party, do you need to know how they will sign things? Or not?
In DID exchange, it matters because you need to, you're checking a signature of their update. But that's different than just sending a message that's just specifically within that protocol.
So what I'm wondering is if we defined recipient keys to be just the key agreement side, and we said the usage that's common today where an ED25519 key is placed in that array and it's intended to represent really just the curve 25519 key instead is a misusage. And we shouldn't be sticking signature keys in there. Is that acceptable or?
So you're kind of calling out the grandfathered misbehavior.
Yeah.
Well, and there is a way to translate in the specific case of ED keys to translate between them. Not all key types have that ability. And so by calling out and saying this must be this, there's this weird grandfathered use case, you're paving the way for other key types to do it better and for us to correct the usage in the Edwards curve case as time proceeds.
Yeah.
I think that's what you're proposing.
Yeah, because and what I'm proposing would not make sense if there really is a need to express the signature keys of the parties that are receiving the messages. I'm being careful not to use the word recipient keys. If we really need to express that particular thing in order to make DIDCOM work, then it's yeah. more than just a minor problem here. We've overloaded something, but I think instead of overloading, what we've actually done is used the wrong value.
Yeah, in DIDCOM V1, I suppose that signature keys should be conveyed in outside the service DIDCOM endpoint because it's only currently being used for the signing key itself is only currently being used for DID exchange in the RFCs and that's it.
Also signed attachments, but that's a little
assigned attachments, but in the for DID exchange, or is it a general requirement that signed attachments are somehow the signature key is somehow in this recipient's key array?
No. Oh, something just clicked in my brain. No, it doesn't. It just indicates that it should be a key in the DID doc of the other party, which in that case would be a signing key. So the issue here is that we are signing the new thing with the key used for encryption prior. George, I'm finally learning and figuring this out here. You're patient in explaining it to me. So the way we design DID exchange, you sign the the new updated DID doc with the key used to encrypt the previous message. And that's the multi-use problem we're running into. And so what we need is that the DID exchange protocol should properly say that you are signing the DID document with a signing key present in the previous DID document.
Yes.
And if you get the signing key by translating the encryption key, that's okay. But it's a signing key that's present in the document, not the same key that was used for encryption.
Well, right. I guess that's okay. When you said that's okay, I mean, that's sort of what I guess Daniel and I, or at least myself, I'm trying to move away from, like, the that's okay part, referring to actually deriving or using the signing key that is reusing the signing key essentially for a key agreement. So I'm just like shooting at the nitpicks here and there, but overall I think you got it, I guess.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a question, and I apologize if this is a little bit too deep of a rat hole for this particular discussion, but is the implication that we need to make sure that we support keys that you cannot derive one from the other, or is it considered bad practice to actually use the derived key of one for the other, in the sense that if you wanted to use Edwards curve keys for both, and one was used for encryption and the other one was a signing key, that you would actually explicitly need to include two keys?
So of the, well, you know, of the research I've done, I do have a link to a NIST document where they recommend keys to be used only for one purpose. And I don't think it'll be hard to fetch more sort of like quote unquote authoritative sources saying the same thing.
However, having said that, I think it is a relatively common practice.
It is, and the Edwards curve was chosen because it had this property. I mean, that was one of the reasons why Edwards said, hey, this is a useful curve. Look at this cool thing you can do. So
that's why I think, even if, you know, George, I'm aligned that you need two keys for cases where you cannot do this. I'm not, if we're only worried about 25519, this curve, then I'm not worried about this, because I think everyone that uses this is going to go with the one.
One thing to understand, the reason why NIST made the recommendation about not using keys for more than one purpose is because cryptographically speaking, if you're a cryptanalyst and you're looking at the breakability of certain things, different kinds of keys have different, or different uses of keys, let me be real precise, have different breakability characteristics. A signature key, there are certain attacks where if you see a signature key and you can force somebody to sign a particular thing, you are positioned to do what's called a chosen plain text attack on the signature. It's harder to do a chosen plain text attack on encryption, although also possible. And therefore people tend to feel like when you use a signing key, you're over time, you're exposing more than if you're using it just for encryption. So if you use your encryption key to also sign, you actually have the security guarantees of a signing key, which are less than the security guarantees of an encryption key. The truth is that both of the guarantees are still quite strong. It's not as if sign 100 things and suddenly your key is discovered, but it's still something that makes cryptographers who are purists about how many bits of encryption you have, it makes them uncomfortable.
Now the question George has raised before is, what do you do if you need a key that doesn't have this property?
Right.
And particularly, and again, I'm only caring really about the particular case of if you have to use already accepted NIST keys, we have to have a way to express two of them.
Absolutely right.
And that's the thing we're, the conundrum we're trying to solve. That's why I still come back to, I think if we could get DidKey to allow for both types, you know, have a form of DidKey that allows two keys to be expressed, a verification and a key agreement, then we'd be the way to the races because we could just use DidKey in here.
Well, we're very near doing that. We have a follow-up conversations, but we're very near doing that with DidPeer anyway.
Yeah,
by extending the same mechanism. We got to resolve those differences there. But it sounds like what we really need is a declaration here that both the routing and the recipient keys are encryption keys.
Yes.
With the weird grandfathered case that says, hey, this is an encryption key, not a signing key, for in case anyone's confused about Edwards. And we need to revisit DidExchange to say it needs to be a key, a signing, you know, signed by a signing key. And in the weird case that you're using Edwards curve, then that's acceptable, with a nod to that you shouldn't use it for two cases, but that may not apply to Edwards curve keys because it was weird and chosen because it was weird.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like we have a path forward, Daniel. Does this make sense for what you plan to do?
Well, I think I have enough clarity that I can write some language and propose it. George just put in chat a link to the NIST recommendation and to the IETF RFC about choosing values for cryptographic agility. And so I will try to reference those in what I write up.
Right. But the service, to narrow this back down to the service block here that we're proposing registering officially, the what we really need to declare is that these are encryption keys.
No, I don't think that solves it, Sam.
I think it does, because in the preparation of a message to go to the other party, when do you use a signing key?
This is how you, as far as I know, this is for V1, this is what we're essentially using as the DID doc for the other party, the peer did doc for the other party. This is what we're using, and this is all we've got. So, and when we communicate with that other party, we are doing signing and encryption.
Yeah, but that's not a concern of this declaration, the did document. That's a concern of how DidExchange specifies this to be handled. Now, if DidExchange says use the exact same thing that goes in a service block, then the DidExchange protocol is insufficient. It needs to be updated to include the proper nuance and allowance for transfer of other key types.
Out of band as well. So the signing key would need to be included in the out of band message. So I'm not sure how that intersects with the out of band invitations that have a DID, that point to a DID, because a DID document can have keys for exactly this purpose. I think the correct purpose would be assertion method, but so gotta think a little bit about that. Don't think it'll be that complicated, I guess. I'm not sure.
That would be a great conversation for next week, by the way, if someone's willing to put together some notes on what's wrong with what we've got and what we have to do about it.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll bring that up again.
Sorry. So I think I heard a call for action. Was that a call for action
I would love a call for action. Do we have any volunteers to lead a discussion about what's wrong with out-of-band and DidExchange and what we have to do about them?
Okay, so I pushed a proposal. So do I need to write up something separate and maybe a little bit more distilled?
Or you could just present it in the meeting and help us all understand.
So I already presented that proposal and you called it silly. So what do we do now?
Well, the specific reason I called it silly is because it is that
V2?
It imposes something that is not DID based.
Yeah.
That and I haven't seen sufficient argument that we should not be going fully DID based in V2 yet, which means it would be a temporary third.
Here's what I'll do. I'll revisit with now in my mind I'll revisit that proposal with in mind and keep in mind the transition to V2 and this conversation we just had, I guess, and we should be a relatively short, small delta to the proposal, and we can have a chat. I can present that chat next call.
That would be awesome. And I apologize in this process for my lack of clear understanding of these general concepts. I am not a cryptographer, and it is biting me to understand these things.
So, I understand because this is not, or at least from my point of view, it is not all laid out like in a convenient, easily digestible couple of paragraphs explaining all this. You just have to sort of figure it all out as you actually, you look at the IANA registry, Jose IANA, your registry and all that.
Yes, and I have not managed to do that successfully. So I appreciate your efforts at helping me understand. So yes, if you're willing to give that a revisit, that would be super helpful. Okay.
Will do.
Perfect. Okay. So we're going to look at this. Daniel's going to take a look at that. And then what we need then, the other piece of work, if we are going to officially register this, for DIDCOM V1 representation in the registry here, is we need a context created that links, and here's some examples, right? Here's the context for the well-known DID configuration that we would then host within the Aries RFC repo and provide as a context for, in our documentation. Further, we would need a PR adding the Aries-based DIDCOM communication service type to this document. I don't know if we're going to get any pushback from the DID spec registry people about the fact that we're trying to put two DIDCOM things in the document. So we'll need to be really clear about the language in it so that we can help avoid any confusion that they may experience for people that are not well aware of the V1 versus V2 efforts. That's not quite ready to be submitted anyway, but that could get started if someone wanted to get going on that. We'll need to make sure that the rest of these conversations are resolved before we actually submit those. But if someone wanted to get the party started, that would be acceptable. Okay, any other comments, questions, thoughts, suggestions before we move on to the AIP next sub-targets conversation? Okay, this here is the link that I have referenced in here, and it links to a specific file inside of a PR to Steven's fork of the Aries RFC repo. I link to it because it will render more nicely. Let me actually go, the diff was a little ugly, but this will help show what is new versus what is not. Last week, I floated the idea that one of the ways around the extreme degree of optionality that we were getting is to actually have sub-targets that were part of AIP2. And the idea then is that the basic part of AIP2 becomes more sort of core protocols, and then we define the proper balance number of sub-targets that can be used by those seeking those particular types of functionality as an interoperability target. I will sort of re-highlight the fact that the whole purpose of AIP is to provide a fixed target for multiple groups trying to achieve interoperability on the same things. That's one of the reasons why the mechanism is Stephen has created that's awesome, is that it links to a specific commit of an RFC, not just an RFC generally, to resolve any conflicts about what it exactly says in which version. So what I've done here is I've taken the, this didn't show it particularly well. the diff. But the idea here is that you have the instead that we now have base requirements, which are linked to which contain the original list more or less. And then we have sub targets that include other types of features and concepts that relate to the specific sub target. You'll notice in my list of sub targets that I've done a couple things as an example. And one of them is that I have a indie based credentials one here, sub target, and a JSON-LD based credentials sub target here. And there's overlap between these two. And that's okay. And what that means is that if you're already doing one, then doing the other one is simply a matter of supporting the diff there, or the difference between the two. And so that's what I've proposed. So this really didn't do well for a diff. Let me go back to the actual file view piece of this. So I added a little bit of text talking about so this is commentary that may or may not go away. That was kind of used as notes here, but I added some commentary about the set of base requirements and additional optional targets. And I suggested a way that you could indicate compatibility with AIP 2 and include the list of sub targets that you were actually included in your software project. Not written in here, but I think the idea here is that we lose optionality, meaning when you declare that you support AIP 2, you support every one of the base requirements here, and that then you specify the other targets that would indicate the, you know, sort of the optional type nature of things. And a good example of this is the mediator coordination feature. So I gave this a tag of mediate, and it includes the route coordination that is entirely optional for anyone building an agent. If you want to use it, that's great. If you don't, then no worries. But what that allows you to specify is that I support AIP to mediate, ignore the indie creds for a minute, and then other people can know that that's actually the base level stuff that you're supporting. I also pulled out indie-based credentials, LD-based credentials, and BBS Plus-based credentials. And then I didn't love this name, but the idea here was that this would lump in the presentation exchange as part of that. I also included the DIDCOM V2 envelope prep as a separate one. And I argued with myself when I proposed this, because there's a balance between what goes in core versus what doesn't go in core. There's sort of a medium thing that I think is probably the right answer there. I also pulled out a basic message. We heard from people that they said, hey, I don't plan on implementing basic message. That's not a thing that makes sense in our product. And so by pulling it actually out, you can indicate such. Anyway, so hopefully that's a bit of an overview. Thoughts, comments?
Okay, so immediate comment is that due to the overlap, I'm assuming that the common RFCs are actually pinned to the same commit or version. I don't know, I'm not sure, in order to avoid issues there.
Oh, you mean like when it's present here and present there?
Yeah.
So yes, so I actually just copied these so they currently are, but you're right. To avoid insanity, they should if they're present in multiple targets, it should be the same
must.
Commit.
They must. I mean, it's
yeah. So yeah. I didn't write that language, but that is something that that should be in the description there.
So my comment was 453 V2 and 454.
I lost you, Stephen.
Yeah.
Stephen, we can't hear you. Still can't hear you.
Shoot.
Still can't hear you. Oh, there okay. You are.
Oh, so I'd like to see 453 and 454 in the core. And I would like to see equivalent to 510 and 511 for both indie and JSON-LD.
Okay, so there's two discussions that I hope to have today. One is this this mechanism at all a good idea? And what types of considerations are there? And George brought a good one up, which means if you have the same thing that's in multiple targets, the same RFC, it must match the same commit in this mechanism. So that's the meta conversation that I think is a really important one, because if this is a terrible idea, we should discuss something else. The second level conversation is, how do we want to adjust what I've proposed here to get to the right balance of things? So you jumped right to the second one, Stephen. Yep,
you're right. And so my first comment is, I like this. I think this is good. I think there's too many categories. So I would, every category needs to earn its place. but I think the category, the sub-targets need, this is a good way of doing it. So I like it.
By earn its place, do you mean a use case?
Discussion. I don't want to go that formal, but basically, you know, I don't like the idea of, so I would argue the presentation exchange one as being a separate one, and I would put it into either, you know, the BBS Plus or the JSON LD or both. But, you know, it's, and the prep one as well. I would argue we don't want to go that far.
Which one?
The prep one. I think it ought to be in core. I think we should figure it out and put it in core.
I also think that we ought to challenge whether something's ready for when we put something in these categories and we say everyone should do it, because really that's what we're doing when we standardize. I think we need to be careful we don't do that too soon or too early. If we think that the first implementation hasn't fully stabilized yet, it may be that it's great to keep pushing it forward as an RFC, but it's probably early to put it in this type of a list.
I do think, so sort of aligned, I think, with that sentiment, I do think it would be best if we have at least two working implementations from different vendors interoperating using, I don't know, like the beta or the draft or whatever of this of these interop core profiles and sub-targets.
Well, and George, I don't know if I would even have to go that far. I think as long as I feel like there is an implementation that's used in production or that's like it's stable enough, it's not shifting around, then it's worth telling everybody that they should consider it. But in some of these cases, there's something that we're excited to use later on, and we want people to look at it, but it may not be ready to tell everybody that they should implement it yet.
I would argue that that's the why the sub targets are there.
Yeah, maybe, right? And have the core be actually have actual implementation and sub targets, you know, be a little bit more loose.
Yeah.
The whole point of an AIP is to provide, we agree as a community, this is a target that multiple parties want to converge on, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that the earning its place as a sub-target, and that's why I use the word target in the first place, is that we're all shooting at the same target and we all want to get as close as we can to the bullseye, right? So I think the qualification for earning a sub-target is that if you have multiple parties that desire to converge on that target. And you'll notice here that if you pull out all of these things, and let's continue that conversation, but what's left is actually some good mechanics, but relatively bare mechanics of DIDCOM itself. That's as I've packaged it. Right now, we can argue for certain things to be included in the core or not. The thing that I liked about this is that this is a really good foundation for building stuff. And one of the things that sub-targets can do is that I think it can be a little bit experimental. To George, your comment, in that because it's an optional target, if someone says, you know, let's say, you know, group A and group B say, hey, we want to try and implement, you know, this sub-target, and then it like doesn't work out, it's not the end of the universe. Now, we still don't want to get wild and crazy and make a million of them, but it won't be a fundamental failure of the AIP because it's this more narrowly based sub-target. The one of the reasons why I pulled several of these things out, not that I think that we have to do it this way, but I discovered when I was pulling out the JSON-LD and the BBS-based credentials that that pulling Indy also out also made sense. And that allowed for any project that didn't implement Indy-based credentials to actually declare, without optionality, full AIP2 compatibility and then a target that was focused on the things that they were in fact doing. And the I think there's a lot of value there. And I began to realize that things like mediator coordination also fall into this, is that not everyone wants to be a mediator, and that's okay. Not everyone wants to provide a human chat feature, and that's okay. But here's what I started to think about. If I'm building a mediator and I support all of these things, which I kind of need to, at least at some basic level, and I support route coordination, am I then not allowed to say that I'm AIP? If we follow that optionality is gone, am I not allowed to say that I'm AIP2 compatible because I don't support any credential issuance protocols in my role as a mediator? And that's what I was getting to. I think that right now we are fairly still focused on credentials as the main use case for agents. I see in the future a wider variety of these things. And this type of mechanism, whether we do it this round or not, this type of mechanism can allow for the same compatibility goals that we have, but for agents that are of totally different purposes. And some of those purposes may not actually require a credential exchange.
I think mediator, you're sounds like you're kind of doing that based on the mediator use case. And I think it is kind of a special one. So I'm not wildly swayed. It's a good argument, but I'm not really swayed by it, that I want to remove the V2 out of core just to be able to say, oh, I'm a mediator.
You mean the credential V2s out of?
Yeah. Could you scroll up again a little to see the rest? Like,
that's the whole list of core.
Yeah. Do you really get rid of all of those things? Do you need all the rest of these to be a mediator? I guess it's not far off, actually.
Well, are we still on the meta discussion, or
yes? Kind of.
Because I had the same thoughts or similar thoughts along those same lines, but I'm just waiting for the meta discussion to end so that we can actually put those forward.
Yeah.
So, let me stir the meta discussion pot. Does anyone think this is a terrible idea, or that it needs adjustments to be a usable mechanism for an AIP? I wrote this. I want to hear all criticisms.
I think it's better to have a very strict frame than multiple options for stability and interoperability. But that's my two cents.
Would you be willing to say a little more about that?
Yeah, so it's better to have a very strict frame, because after all, that's what a standard is for, at least in my view, to make it as hard for developers and software companies and all of that to deviate from it. Because, for instance, in my experience with other standards, like a few about access control, for instance, I've run into multiple occasions where you have these very lengthy standards, for instance, and they leave these wormholes that are not so apparent, and then nothing works. I can give you an example, XACML, for instance, if you know about it. That's a very well-established supposedly standard, but the pitfalls that it has in its components, they are insane. when you deal with it in practice.
So I completely agree with you, but there's a couple of complexities of this process that I've observed over the last number of conversations we've had. And one of them is that in order for the frame to function as it is, we all have to agree on the frame. And in the disagreement about a frame, you can either not do it at all, or you can figure out a way to sort of manage the differences in frames on the different opinions about how things should actually be. Now, if this is a company, then someone is responsible to make the decision and everyone else can grumble about it, but they've got to keep going. But this isn't a company. We're a community here. And so the sort of top-down mandate approach just isn't going to work. The reason I propose this is that it doesn't provide infinite flexibility, but it does provide for a difference in view, in the sense that if there are different targets or goals that people are achieving, we can accommodate some degree of frame difference or point of view difference without losing the whole goal of providing a fixed interoperability target. And so I completely acknowledge the fact that allowing these things makes it a little less fixed. But the way we were approaching it, we had these weird optionality things where we're like, hey, it's really useful if everyone doing mediation bases it off the same thing, but then it's like optional for everybody. And so I feel actually better about this as a fixed thing, or a thing that we can fix to be more rigid in that sense than the degree of optionality that we were pursuing. So that's a really long, squishy answer, but I acknowledge and I agree with your desire for the fixed frame. I think the conclusion that I'm beginning to come to is that might be an increasingly difficult task. Even the difference between last round and this round has shown a bit of difference that way. And I see that growing more in the future for good, legitimate reasons, not for misbehaving in the community reasons. And so having some sort of a sense on how we might approach this would be useful to us as a community.
Yeah, Bob, honestly, Sam, to be completely honest about this, you have far more experience in open source communities than I have. So that's one thing. Second thing is that I'm really new here, so you should really not take my opinion with a lot of weight on it. I'm just trying to pitch in as much as I can while I learn through all these things. That's all. So, yeah.
Christos, thank you for sharing your views and opinion. I think the rest of us probably have less experience in open source than you might think we do. And the only way we grow and improve is by listening to each other. As far as that goes. Other thoughts on the meta before we move beyond the meta conversation and explore the second layer?
A quick thought on Christo's comment is I like the fact that this gives us a concise way of expressing alignment without forcing people down paths they don't want to be. And I think in where we are in this community, that's okay. And I think in the next round, we'll probably eliminate and we'll probably cut that back, my guess is, because, you know, differences in being able to use credentials is going to matter more and more. So I'm okay with it right now and find it a useful concept. So I like it. Back to that.
I agree. I think this is really well laid out. This is something laid out the way I've wanted to see for a while. So it looks really, really good. Let me ask just one quick question. So what's going to happen with these different, we have the core set up above the base requirements, and then we have these optional sections. So will the procedure be that my agent will contact the remote agent and ask if it supports a given extended protocol.
So we have the discover features protocol, which you use to discover, you know, what the other party actually supports. The function of the AIP is not a runtime function. It's a developer design time function, in the sense that let's say I have some software and you have some software, and we decide that we want to do BBS based credential interoperability between our two software, right? We would both do the base requirements, and then we would also focus on these. And as we accomplish this, we're then able to share with the community, hey, I am AIP2 BBS cred compatible. And it gives us a relatively concise way to specify our compatibility level as part of that process. Does that make sense? So this is more of a developer time tool than a runtime tool.
Oh, of course, of course. But if my agent responds back that we support BBS plus credentials, then we support at a minimum all three of these features that are specified right there, right?
Well, yes, but there's not really a way currently to say we support BBS credentials. You can say I support these three protocols.
But could there be a way?
There could be. And the Discover Features 2 has a mechanism that doesn't yet do this, but could, that actually allows you to specify. So when you have disclosures, you have feature types, and those feature types could be protocols as listed here. They could also be credential formats or other types of things. Extensible. Yeah, it's extensible in the sense that we could do that. However, we can't all extend in our own directions. We would need to provide or write an RFC that talks about what feature types there should actually be so that we can, you know, converge around the same, dictionary, if you will, of options. So yes, there is, Steve, a way of doing this, but we haven't really exercised it very deeply yet.
So let me add to that thought a little bit. I very much like this layout where there's a base set of requirements that everyone needs to comply with in order to be compatible with this protocol. But then there are extensions, for lack of a better term, BBS plus, JSON LD, whatever. I would recommend that the Discover features be a little more group specific, so if I send a message and ask if a remote agent supports BBS plus, I need to know what that means. And so having this laid out on this chart right here, we've got three RFCs that comprise BBS plus base credentials. I think that's good, because if you ask the question, do you support BBS plus, we need to all know what that means. Whereas if you're asking, do you support revocation, notification, issue credential 453, present 454, then all of a sudden it starts to get, it seems a little too complex. And so the extensibility gets a little too fragmented, it seems like.
I think what you're saying, Steve, is that if you take the bundle of things we're doing here and you identify it by something, and I've given these a tag, that if we supported that in the Discover's features protocol as a feature type, maybe the feature type is an interoperability profile, and you could list the interoperability profiles that you comply with, that would be a simpler way of discovering sort of group functionality than having to independently verify them.
Exactly. Yes.
I hadn't considered specifying AIP compatibility in the Discover features protocol, but I'm totally not opposed to it.
Yeah, that would be preferable.
Yeah, it just seems like we'd have to be really clear on how we specify it, both at kind of the bundles of functionality like an AIP profile is, and at the lower level of granularity, so that if a system doesn't understand what the bundle means, it's still clear how they can discover features they do understand.
You're still going to be able to ask for protocols, right? So the bundling feature won't take over, but it would provide, I think, another mechanism that you could use to maybe shortcut that. And so I think what I've done here, for example, is I posited how you might actually display that what you format. I think in the case of the Discover Features protocol, it would be make sense to not bundle them. So you could actually say AIP2, or you would say AIP2/1 target. And then you would list the multiple targets that you actually complied with. So you could say AIP2 IndieCreds and AIP2 Mediate as two separate entries. And that way it would be easier to perform a match. And I could simply specify how this applies to the Discover Features protocol in a useful way. And I think that would work.
Yeah, and I think doing it that way, I think that gets back to the point that Christos brought up a few minutes ago, which is let's be a little more rigid in the protocol so it's more well-defined. And so this is kind of a hybrid where we have the core set, and then we have these various extensions that each comprise multiple sub-features. They may overlap a little bit, like IndieCreds with JSON-LD credentials. There's some overlap there, which is fine. But when I answer back and say, I support JSON-LD-based credentials, it needs to be very well defined what that means. And that way, as an implementer, then I can come to a spot like this and I can look right on that chart and say, okay, beyond the base, I need to support these three in order to be BBS plus compatible or whatever. And that way it's very clear to me as a developer what I have to implement in order to be compatible and answer back yes. And so it becomes more well-defined while we're allowing extensions.
I agree with you, Steve. I believe that the important part is that we support both the raw level granular answers, like which actual protocols, and we haven't talked about this yet, but which actual credential format you support, and the ability to specify what the group is actually like. So yes. Okay. So we're short on time. Yep. There's a couple.
Oh yeah, sorry. So I'm not sure if you included that there, but have you thought about how to reference a specific version of a spec being formed outside? So for instance, BBS Plus or Presentation Exchange.
You practically read my mind.
Yeah.
You'll notice that anytime there's not a linked item here, that we don't actually have an RFC that we can link to the specific commit of. So I have two ideas here, and Stephen, I'll need your thoughts on this. One is that if it's in a repository, we can actually link to a specific external thing. The other option that I thought of is that we could create an RFC, which basically wraps and specifies any additional details and then links to, in whatever version locking way works, the external resource. It may be not a commit, but it might be a URI that is very specific, for example.
So the example that comes to my mind is a JWE envelope RFC, which essentially, one of the things it does is it wraps the ECDH 1PU IETF RFC. So how would that work? I mean, mechanically speaking, do we need to specify which exact version of the 1PU draft to point to? RFC, would that be it? Okay.
I think that's the point of an AIP, is that it's way more specific than just that general thing over there we support. So I think if you are going to refer to external resources, you should, as possible, get as specific as you can.
Well, and this is where I like the wrapping instead of directly referencing, because it is probably a good thing for us to describe the scope or the limitations or extra considerations that we might need to specify as part of pointing to the spec, especially with some of the specs we've developed at the diff or at the W3C. Sometimes the goals or ambitions of that spec have a lot of pieces that are beyond the scope of our protocol, or sometimes there's additional considerations we have to specify in order to prevent people from getting themselves into trouble.
Agreed.
Yeah, I like the wrap thing too, more than the direct link to something external. it, we may want to implement something where we have to specify like, hey, here's the link, but the link doesn't return the right thing. But you know, if you navigate to this link and that link and where you hit this and you hit that, or on the same page, there's examples of both, you would be able to clarify that in the wrapped RFC. Okay, so I don't know that we have commentary about the wrapping, but I think we should. We are out of time. So I have a couple things that I would request of folks. One is that where there is something that doesn't actually have a link, should be a link, but we don't have it in here yet. That would be useful. The other thing, or if we don't have one, creating one so that we can, like here's the presentation exchange.
Yeah.
No needs one. The other thing is the discussion that we sort of didn't really have sufficient time for to discuss about what actually should be in core and what should not be. I kind of went overboard a little bit on purpose for the purposes of the first layer discussion, but this is a PR already on Steven's repo. And if you will comment like soon, like today or tomorrow about some initial things, then we can go ahead and get this merged into Steven's PR so that there's not a PR of a PR. I would love to do that as we go forward. I'll get this updated with the stuff that we've talked about today.
One more thing.
Yep, please.
I'd love to see is in addition to the what was suggested about the Discover features to use these as a way to check feature support, use the subtargets, use the core and subtargets. I think that would be awesome. And as I think about our test harness that we've written, that would be huge feature to help with that. It was so much easier to be able to test different things easily.
I believe that those need to be defined. I think the extensions of the Discover features and what feature type you're talking about. And I believe the AIP RFC is actually the right place to document how that should be done for an AIP. So I will include that in the updates that I do, Stephen.
Excellent. Thanks.
Awesome. Thanks everyone for coming. We are over time. I hope your week is a wonderful one. Please do follow the link and add comments if you have any initial feedback. And hopefully this helps us move forward and wrap up the remainder of the work necessary to get AIP something that we can finalize. Good. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.